Hi, I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc. And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk about all things healing pans and pandas with a special focus on homeopathy. And today we're just going to go do a brief interview or introduction, I guess, instead of interview. We're going to do a brief introduction to what pans and pandas actually is, just to sort of set the stage for everything else that we're talking about in this podcast. So I'm going to give you a bit of an overview about the diagnostic criteria and what that looks like with pans and pandas. Jody's going to tell you a little bit about what it looks like in real life. So pans and pandas are similar. So pans stands for pediatric acute onset neuropsychiatric syndrome. Panda stands for pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorders associated with strep. And so PANS is kind of like the umbrella. PANDAS is underneath it, that it's a very specific type of PANS. And a lot of people, some doctors will actually talk about it as if they're separate, because one is a syndrome and one is a disorder. So one is more clearly defined, and that's true. And I have never seen a child who is only susceptible to strep. So realistically, pandas is a defined space underneath the PANS umbrella. And so what happens with PANS and pandas is that you see a misdirected immune response. So basically, the body gets exposed to some sort of immune stimulus. It could be strep, it could be mycoplasma, it could be cytomegalovirus, it could be Lyme, it could be mold, it could be environmental toxins, it could even be allergies that are just really severe allergies. Something that triggers an immune response in the body that then is misdirected. And instead of just attacking the invader, the bug, the infection, the toxin, whatever it happens to be, that it has a spread throughout the body where it starts attacking the body itself. We understand more about what's happening in pandas, which is another reason that it's one, a disorder, and two, more talked about than PANS, because we have a better understanding of exactly what's happening in pandas. And with that, I will acknowledge that at some point I might have to remove that thing where I say that pandas is a subset of PANS and we might have to call it separate things. But it just really helps to get that like umbrella, like I said, because most kids end up, even if they get the diagnosis of pandas, have other things that trigger it as well. So it's rarely just strep. So the theory, what we understand that happens in pandas is that a kiddo is exposed to strep and they have a what's called molecular mimicry occurs, where the strep comes in, it tries to hide from the immune system by putting proteins on the surface that look very similar to our self proteins. And so the body says, oh, everything's fine here. It's basically like if I were to come on and say, and I put on like a Jody mask and I'm like hanging out with Jody's family. And they're like, for a minute, they're like, oh, okay, that's a pretty good mask. That's probably Jody. But they're going to figure out pretty quickly that I'm not actually Jody. I'm not as tall as her. I'm not like, we just, our bodies look very differently. So they're going to figure out that's a good mask, but that's a mask. That's not Jody. And so they're going to, what happens to their immune system is it broadens the attack. And so it's going to start getting all of the things that are wearing the Jody mask and some of Jody too. And so that's where we start to see the autoimmune response occur as a result, again, of this thing that's called molecular mimicry. And so there are parts of the brain that are more susceptible to it, and that can lead to a series of symptoms that we see that are pretty typical in PANS or pandas. In pandas, they will say that there needs to be a temporal relationship, so a closeness in time to an infection. That said, there's lots of kids who get an infection with strep and you have no idea that they were infected with strep because they don't have the typical strep symptoms. They have no fever, no sore throat, no changes in the tongue or anything like that. They just have the neuropsychiatric symptoms that are caused as a result of this misdirected immune response. So you can't always get a clear temporal relationship. So in order to get the official diagnosis of pandas, which is to be able to have that closeness in relationship to a known infection, or to have elevated titers that show that there was a recent infection. So that could be ASO or anti-DNA-B titers that would show that there was a recent infection that you may not have been aware of. And there are some folks that they think that they've never had strep, but their titers are really high. And that's how they know that they actually have, and that these are symptoms that are likely as a result of that. The symptoms are similar, whether you're talking about PANS or if you're talking about pandas. PANDAS does have an age range that we're looking at, typically because of the time that people are most susceptible to getting strep. But you might actually get strep as an adult. So it's just like kind of a weird thing about the diagnostic criteria. So that's what we think is happening in the body. The symptoms that we'll see as a result is we see behavioral changes. We see in the theoretically rapid onset OCD and tics. And there can be food restriction, usually as a result of OCD, not so much of like a more eating disorder type of thing where we're wanting to change the way that the body looks. It's usually more related to fears about food, fears about health, things like that. So more of like obsessive thoughts about things that could go wrong, and it's a compulsion to not eat. So there can be rage, intense separation anxiety, changes in potty training, basically. So fully potty trained children can have regressions where they start wetting the bed, having big accidents or urinary frequency during the day, weird sensations in their genital area where we call it phantom wetness is a really common one, where they think that they're wet even though they're not, or they want to need to feel like the compulsion or that need to wipe again and again and again. Changes in handwriting is really common. And I already mentioned tics too, and you can also sometimes see other neurological types of symptoms. Those are the most common things. Occasionally you can see some onset of pains as well, because there can be other areas that are attacked. Those usually tend to follow on later, less so if you're getting treated with homeopathy than if you're using other therapies, we've noticed. But there can be some onset of like joint pains, you know, juvenile rheumatoid arthritis type symptoms. Other autoimmune symptoms could also start following on later, or sometimes at the same time. Digestive concerns, sensory sensitivity, migraines, those are all things that can come along with it. So it's really a complex system-wide condition. A lot of times you'll see ebbs and flows of symptoms as well. So you'll see a spike that will seem to go away. And so a lot of people will look back once they finally get a diagnosis and say, oh, all of those spikes along the way where my kid had tics for a little while and then they went away. And my pediatrician told me, oh, kids get tics, so don't worry about it. Or, oh, my kid was really sensitive to these things. And my pediatrician said, oh, it'll be transient, it'll go away. And it did, but there's ebbs and flows, basically like an inclined sawtooth pattern is usually what we see. We have a spike of symptoms and it gets better, but maybe the kid was not quite as good as they were before the first one. And then they have another spike of symptoms and then they get better, but again, not as good as they were the last time the spike wore off. And a lot of times we get this diagnosis when we've seen a lot of those spikes and patterns, or when it comes and it just sticks. Cause some of these kiddos end up getting to that point where they don't have a return to baseline or a return to better. They just sort of get stuck in their symptoms. So Jody, I'm going to pause here cause I've talked a whole lot, and I would love if you could share a little bit more about what all of those things look like in real life, because it never is as, well, I won't say never, it is rarely as clear as like a diagnostic criteria or a diagnostic algorithm will tell you.
Yeah. And it wasn't, and even going back before PANS and PANDAS, you know, Avery was healthy, normal kid. But I also now recognize that there was some significant immune system stuff going yeah. on, like her immune system wasn't working well. And once all of, you know, once her tics and her kind of almost rage episodes when I was picking her up from school and her like imagined concerns that she was having with classmates and like struggling with school stuff, when all of that started and then I learned about PANS and PANDAS, in the beginning was like, no, because it wasn't sudden onset. Like these things have been like slowly rolling. But you know, the further I got into it, the more I realized that there was a significant point where there was a change. And then all of a sudden things, so it wasn't like an abrupt overnight. Avery had all of the symptoms and she was horrible. And, you know, it can happen either way. It can be that quick, or it can be kind of a slow rolling thing. And that ebb and flow that you just explained was exactly what happened with Avery. I mean, we started with those original symptoms, and then she would get a little bit better and then she would get worse again. And each time she got worse, I feel like more symptoms would just pile on. And we were just, we went from dealing with a little bit of stuff at school pickup to having 70, 80% of our day just completely consumed with anxiety and obsessions and extreme separation anxiety, like could not even leave the room that I was in. We could not be in separate rooms because she was so afraid to be away from me. Like it would take hours for her to get to bed at night. The tics, you know, started with the cough tic, but man, the tics for Avery just, I mean, she was neck movements. She was, when she was walking, one leg would kick out, when she would have all kinds of shoulder movements, and then her piano fingers started, and the tics just seemed to keep getting worse and worse and more frequent throughout the day. Like it was happening more often. School started to go more downhill, got to the point where she was completely refusing to even get out of the car in the morning to go into school. She went through periods of having almost an aversion to my husband, which was devastating to him, as it would be to any parent. Lashing out at siblings, lashing out at me, like throwing things at me, being violent. One of Avery's first and most disturbing and most confusing to me was age regression. Mm-hmm. I ran across a video a couple of days ago. I was looking at old videos, and it was a video that I had probably taken for you back whenever, you know, we first got started, of her just screaming at the top of her lungs to call her a baby, and that she was a baby, and that we had to call her a baby, and just in full on rage. What was happening inside our house was not believable. And then we would go outside of our house, or someone would come into our house, and it was like Avery had a little bit of control all of a sudden. So it's even more confusing because, wait a minute, does my kid have control of this? Is my kid just acting out? All of the question, like, is this the questions that I was asked? Is this my, you know, parenting? Is this, are we seeing a need for more discipline here, or, all of the things. So it's really confusing. But once I, once I got to the point where I understood that, this was inflammation in her brain. There was infections that were doing crazy things in her body, and it was causing inflammation. And that inflammation was causing all of these symptoms. And yes, she did have control of it, and she was most comfortable around me. So a lot of the symptoms hung out more around me. But it was just what we were experiencing in our house was just craziness, not something that I couldn't explain it to anybody. And there were so many pieces. I know we'll get into it more in the next couple of episodes, but there were so many pieces. We were going to different specialists. We were going to a pulmonologist, we were going to the allergist, we were going to, this and that. And everybody had their own little, like, okay, this is Tourette's, or okay, this is ADD, or this is that. And it's like learning about pandas kind of pulled it all together and put everything in the same basket and made it all as a whole make sense. Mm-hmm. And so it was such a blessing to me to be able to learn about it early on. Yeah. But still like a nightmare moving forward, as you know, many of us find.
Yeah. So as Jody mentioned, I did forget and fail to mention the cognitive regression and the age regression, behavioral regression. So it's really actually quite common to see kids have significant regression where they're like a 10-year-old is acting like a 5-year-old, and not just like behaviorally, but functionally too. Like they can't remember to do things that they used to be able to do. Like they can't tie their shoes anymore and they used to be able to tie their shoes. We'll have a lot of reading regression, reading comprehension in particular, and then also math regression can come along as well. And sometimes you can even see dyslexia show up as a result of the neuroinflammation. So dyslexia that did not exist prior to PANS. And the reality is sometimes you might not know. You might think, oh, this dyslexia explains everything, but the dyslexia can actually like wax and wane when it is triggered by that neuroinflammation, it can come and go symptomatically with flares and episodes. So basically what you're probably gathering from this is it's a really complex illness with a whole lot of things going on to it. And I actually even hesitate to call it an illness. I feel like it's just generally sensitivity to the world. But I mean, it is, these are kids who are suffering, right? And your family is suffering too. It's quite complex. There's a whole lot of things going on. And if you've seen one kid with PANS, you've seen one kid with PANS. There are similarities to the way people experience it, but there are differences as well. And it's important to point out that the kids aren't going to have all of these symptoms, most likely. Some are going to have all of them. I mean, Avery basically had all of them, right? Yeah. But they're not all going to have all of them. You might have a kiddo who is more on the OCD and tics and anxiety space, but not really rage-filled. You might have a kiddo who is more rage-filled, and that's what you see, but you don't necessarily underlying that they're is an OCD component to it or an anxiety component that's coming out as rage. You're going to see very different types of tics that people have, different behaviors. Some kids are still fine going to school, some are not. And it is actually relatively common to see it be worse at home, where like they can hold it together at school and they just explodes as soon as they get in the car or when they get home. And it can be hard not to feel like it's about you and about your parenting and your kid just being a jerk. But the reality is these are kids who are very much aware of what is happening. That said, they are not necessarily aware in the moment. And we'll probably talk about this more in future videos and podcasts, future episodes. But there are some kids who it's almost like they are in a different state and they don't remember the rage that they just experienced. And they have some memory issues. And Jody will probably talk to you guys about some of Avery's memory issues in our upcoming episode where we talk about how it all got started for her. So that's the basics about PANS and PANDAS. The rest of this initial part of our podcast series is going to be walking you through all of the things that go into getting a diagnosis, all the different types of treatments, all the considerations and things to think about. So that's why we're going to wrap up here. But we will get into all of that in future episodes. There's just a ton to unpack, as I'm sure you can imagine, with just how complex this is. And so we really need to break it up into smaller digestible bits for you guys. In our next episode, we're going to give you a really brief beginning primer on what homeopathy actually is, since that is our area of expertise and where we have most of our focus. That said, as a naturopathic doctor, I do have expertise in the other things that we're going to be talking about. So I'm not just talking out of nowhere with those things, but my specialty is in homeopathy. So we're going to give you a bit of a brief on what homeopathy actually is, so you can have that for context moving forward as we talk about homeopathy in relation to all the other things that we're talking about as well. So we hope to see you there.
Bye, guys.